Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Snell Nation. Sister Thomas here, your friendly neighborhood anti-authoritarian, and I just wanted to talk. I always like to talk. I wanted to talk a little bit about just small businesses, or I should say small to medium-sized businesses, and why, and this is just my opinion based on my observation, why there's this concerted effort to eradicate that sector, or that section of the economy. And I know, you know, this is a hot topic, but at the same time, it's something that most people are just disengaged from. Like they feel no connection to it, whether you're the working poor or the middle class or the upper middle class. We're so focused on all the other distractions that are being presented to us, be it the sports or pro sports, the stock market, the social justice, racial justice shenanigans that have been pumped up over the past few years, and people so fixated and obsessed with racism and slavery and wrongs of the past, while completely ignoring the present. It's been truly interesting, interesting to watch, but also incredibly sad, you know. But staying on topic, I just wanted to paint the picture and take you back to the year 2020, all those months ago. And because we're moving so fast, we're at such a rapid pace when it comes to our news cycle. I mean, it comes and it goes, and we move on to the next whatever manufactured crisis, or the next bit of celebrity gossip, or whatever other trivial thing is thrown out there for us to focus on, that we don't look back at the most recent past. And I'm talking about just going back 1 year ago, because we forget. So I'm here to remind you, and it's my pleasure to do so. So in 2020, we had hundreds of thousands of small to medium sized businesses just die, you know, forever. And yes, in the grand scheme of things, you know, when you look at the total numbers, now, you know, it's no big deal, right? You know, because roughly, and I'm looking at the small business profile here for the United States 2020 edition, and for 2019, we had 60.6 million small business employees spread out between 31.7 million small businesses. So that's a significant footprint. So when you say, oh, well, hundreds of small businesses were gone in 2020, were lost, filed for bankruptcy, just gone forever. You know, sure, that's a small slice. But I think what we have to take into account is just how we lost so many at that time, and just how easy it was, you know, for something like this to happen. Something that was completely avoidable, something that had an outcome that could have been calculated, easily predicted, was predicted by many, but still happened nonetheless, impacting the lives of millions. I think that's something that needs to be explored, and that's one of the main ways you can avoid repeating the past. Is by learning from these mistakes, learning from these errors. But these days, we're meant to just accept what happened as, well, it just happened. There was no way around it. There was nothing we could do about it. But, you know, just trust the people that keep failing us. Don't ask any questions, and just nod your head, yes and no, and just move on. And that's it. But no, I think that's incredibly idiotic. I mean, that type of mentality works well For a small circle of individuals, sure. But that doesn't serve the quote unquote greater good, or the masses. You know, that type of mentality doesn't serve us, doesn't help us, because we keep screwing up. but going back to 2020, I don't know if you recall, but we had a very long string of politically motivated violence, somewhat sanctioned political violence, that went on for months and months in 2020, from late May all the way through October. And if you look at certain cities like, say, Seattle, or I don't know, Portland, they're still dealing with the occasional little clash between rioters and the police, or Antifa and the police, or Black Lives Matter supporters and the police. And, you know, Portland's dealing with their own madness, consistent madness. But when all that was happening, I mean, we had dozens and dozens of cities. I think it was over 90 cities that had pre-riots. You can call them protests, but a majority of them were pre-riots that descended into just mass chaos. And they followed a kind of a pattern. You'd have, of course, your signs and, you know, people out there chanting out their slogans and all that stuff they learned. And of course, the sun would set. And then at night, out come the, you know, the Molotov cocktails and, you know, the flash bombs and all that kind of stuff. And the destruction, the consistent destruction, and the focus on small businesses. And it got so bad in certain cities. And to name a few, I mean, New York City, Chicago, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Indianapolis, Dallas, Oakland, San Francisco, you know, St. Louis, Seattle, which I mentioned before, Portland. These small business owners, it kept happening. Like they would get attacked. Their stores would just get completely looted, shelves just completely cleaned out, inventory just gone. Then 2 or 3 months would pass. They would think it was over. And this was big in Dallas, New York City, Chicago, and Atlanta, where small business owners would go back, try to rebuild their inventory, work out all the insurance woes and all that stuff, and try to be prepared to reopen at the start of the next fiscal year, you know, in the month of October. And they would get hit again. You know, they would get hit early June. Then they would get hit again in August, and then again in September. Small businesses, to the point where they just threw their hands up and said, well, what can I do? These maniacs keep coming back, stealing all my stuff, and I'm receiving zero, little to no protection from the local law enforcement, little to no protection or support from the political establishment at the local and state levels. And then you have all that. And then you also throw in the constantly changing COVID narrative and the COVID guidelines. Now, with small to medium business, especially if you're a restaurant or you're in the service industry or something along those lines, the rules changed on a weekly basis, where it was just, well, you can have, you know, zero customers inside. Well, you can do curbside pickup and delivery. That's fine. Well, you can have 15% capacity inside and only 25% capacity outside. All right. Well, now you can have 50% inside, 35% outside. Oh, wait, no. Now you can have none inside. It all has to be outside. So then these small business owners, they would invest in building structures outside their business, which that in itself makes zero sense. Like, okay, well, you can't have this many within. Oh, but if you build a structure outside and it's approved by the city and it's up to code, then yeah, you can do that. It's the same type of nonsense that we still see today, where you have people socially distancing at airports, you know, 6 feet of distance. And then they'll get on a plane and they're packed in like sardines. And I witnessed it on national and international flights that I was on, where it was just, you know, hey, sir, stay back. But then I would just cram on a plane and be stuck around all these people. But wait, no, it's okay. I've got my mask on, you know. So none of it makes sense to the rational onlooker. It makes no sense. But small business owners, they had to deal with this. So of course you would have hundreds of thousands of them just throw their hands up and say, hey, I got nothing. What can I do? And I know what you're going to say next. Well, wait a minute. We had the CARES Act. We had all these stimulus packages. We had the payroll protection program, those PPP loans. You know, those were there to bail out those small businesses. Well, you say that, but that's not exactly what happened. There were a lot of issues with that. And this problem spans across multiple presidencies. I'm talking the current administration, the Trump administration, and the Obama administration. Heck, you can even, certain aspects of this, you can even throw in the Bush administration, Bush Jr. But you had these, you know, the PPP loans, and this thing was structured so poorly that you had mega corporations and, you know, all these massive, these mega churches that were able to get millions of dollars in PPP loans. And then you had thousands and thousands of small businesses reporting that they only were able to receive like $1,000 or $2,000, which, you know, wasn't enough to even cover the rent. It wasn't enough to cover really much of anything. And the process was so insane. It looked good on paper. It had a great sound to it. Oh, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars that can be accessed by small businesses to keep them afloat during this time of mass chaos. And let me also add that, you know, COVID didn't do these things. It was the government's response to these things that caused a lot of these problems that crippled the economy and still cripples the economy today here in, you know, the end of 2021. But this thing was put out there as a safety net. But the process, the approval process was kept secret for months and months. The application process was very convoluted. There was a great deal of priority given to a lot of these big companies that weren't even hurting financially, that had reserves, that could have held on for a year, 2 years, or 3 years. But you had small businesses, many of which that were recently, that recently stood up. And by recently, I'm talking, you know, 2015 forward. That were hanging on by a thread and were begging and pleading it and applying over and over again and trying to utilize this resource that was, you know, made available to them, you know, funded by us taxpayers, of course. But the mega businesses and the mega churches, they reap the benefits of all this. You know, I mean, you had individuals like this, Lakewood Church, which is the multimillionaire Joel Osteen's church, who I used to listen to him when I was a kid, and, you know, like great inspirational speaker. But some of his actions and the actions of his organization are questionable. I call it questionable at best. But they received $4.4 million in PPP loans. You had this other mega church, this First Baptist Dallas Church, received $2.2 million. You know, Joyce Myers Ministries, $5 million, like all this stuff. And then you have like these ma and pa shops receive like $500, you know, $1,000. That's insane. Now, these stories didn't get a lot of traction, even at that time when a lot of the stuff came out in the summer and summer to fall to winter of 2020 for obvious reasons, because this whole PPP program, this loan program was meant to be this, hey, look, everybody, we're, you know, the government's doing something and we're looking out for you. But like so many of the things that happened in 2020 and in 2021, it was just about the corporations and protecting them and protecting their needs. They were prioritized. They really were. And breaking it down even further, as much as I hate going into a lot of the racial divides, but during 2020, the PPP loan. Now, there was a report that was published that stated roughly 95% of Black-owned businesses, 91% of Latino-owned businesses, and 75% of Asian-owned businesses were hanging by a thread and were preparing for closure, file for bankruptcy, Chapter 11. Because the PPP loan, the process was structured so poorly that it was incredibly hard for them to get access to these loans. They all applied, but only a handful of them got approval, or they received approval, but the loan they received was pennies. It was nothing. While at the same time they're watching these organizations like the professional sports team, the LA Lakers. There was a scandal where they received like millions of dollars, and then of course they had to go back. Oh no, it was an accident. We're trying to get, you know. So we're talking $500 billion that taxpayers pumped into this thing, and it was touted as, hey, you know, this is to help small to medium sized businesses. And no, that's just, that couldn't be further from the truth. And the facts are there, and the facts are in the public domain. Now we're so distracted and we're so busy, mostly with nonsense, that we won't take the time to do a simple Google search. Or look at some old articles from 2020 and early 2021 to see exactly what the results of these programs were that the taxpayers essentially just wrote a blank check to Congress. And we don't look into it. We just keep on moving forward. Meanwhile, we've got small business after small business just tanking. And it, to the point where, you know, even in 2020, I asked the question, just, you know, is this intentional? Could this be intentional? Could we be witnessing the controlled demolition of the middle class, the dissolval of the middle class, and the absolute just obliteration of small to medium sized businesses? And if that's the case, well, why? And why now? And based on what I've seen, just stepping back, you know, and to add a little bit more to it, let me further paint the picture. Now, this is coming. These are the failure rates of businesses started in 2015. This is our Burlow statistics. The failure rate in 2016 was 20.4%, and then it jumped to 30.9%. 38.6%, and then 2019, 44.6%, and then finally in 2020, it crossed 50%. The rate of failure of new businesses recently started in 2015 to 2016. Now, going into 2020, 2021, that failure rate has crossed 50%. It's far surpassed that. But it's set up in such a way, I mean, everything, where it is incredibly hard for you to start a small business. It was already hard to begin with, you know, decades before. It's always been hard to start a small business and to make it profitable within the first 5 years. But the way things are structured now, I mean, it is next to impossible. It's incredibly difficult unless you have some sort of support net, or if you're coming into it with some assets, some financial stability, and something that you've acquired from somewhere else. But why? Why is that? And, you know, I have to go back to the central bank digital currency. And I've talked about this before, and this is another thing that I feel is, you know, we're diverted away from it. We're diverted away from discussing it in the mainstream. So people don't see it as that big of a deal, but it's a huge deal. For central banks to have that direct access to the end user, to the consumer, you know, for a lot of these banks, and you have these people that are working in the middle, you know, the middlemen, to be taken out is a huge deal. You know, and let me also throw out there a reminder that the Fed, our central bank hub here in the United States, it's not federal. There are no reserves, and it's not federal. It's a privatized bank cartel. It's a club, and we ain't in it. And the control that they would have, you know, the ability to be able to just turn off the faucet on someone, someone who maybe speaks out against the government, someone who disagrees with the actions of an administration, to be able to say, well, you know what, we don't like what you said. And, you know, people complain all the time about being blocked from Facebook for like a week or for a month. And that's happened to me plenty of times. But to turn that into, hey, you know what, we're going to freeze your assets for 2 weeks because, you know, what you said goes against our, our policies and our consumer standards. And, you know, I'm sorry, but you can't access your money for, I don't know, 21 days, you know. And then you also can interject a social credit score and all those wonderful things from China that a lot of Western nations apparently want to jump on board with and try. You know, that power. But in order for something like that to rise, in order for the central bank digital currency to rise, the old system, the fiat currency, what we're currently in, has to die. You know, and in order to make that happen, there are a lot of things that have to take place. I mean, you have to, like, the middle class has to be crippled. You know, the concept of business ownership has to be presented as undesirable and next to impossible to achieve. Small to medium businesses, the ones that exist, they have to be obliterated. There, you have to create a stronger dependency on government, on bloated government. You know, and as I stated before, you know, we're talking over 30 million small businesses, and the amount of employees, we're talking over 60 million. You know, we're a population of almost 330 million here in the United States. You know, so that's a pretty big chunk. And we've watched, those of us that have been paying attention in 2020 to 2021, as thousands and thousands of these businesses failed, as millions and millions more are applying for unemployment. And of course, those unemployment numbers are a joke. They'll show, oh, well, we're down to, you know, we were at 16%, and now we're down to 14%, and now we're down to 12%. Look, things are improving. We just created 100,000 jobs last month, you know. And it's lying with statistics, which is another good book to read. And you can just play with the numbers to get it to show whatever you want it to. And you can add a little bit of emphasis in one area and while completely ignoring another area that's incredibly relevant. And when it comes to the unemployment numbers, you know, I think some people don't realize this, but that once the person is no longer trying to find work, no longer applying for unemployment and those things, you know, they fall off. That's why the percentage drops. Those people have given up, essentially. You know, so no, the true numbers, I would say it's closer to 20%. You know, just like when people talk about inflation, well, the average rate of inflation is 2 to 3%. Well, yeah, that's sure. That was a thing, but that is not the way it is now. You know, and now we just had the Build Back Better plan, which was over $1 trillion that was approved in the House. And I'm sure there'll be a tug of war in the Senate. They might make some small adjustments to it, but it's coming. That's another $1 trillion right there to help with infrastructure. And I'll put that in quotes, which essentially, to me, it looks like it's just another way to siphon off money from the taxpayers and put it in the hands of the bureaucrats, which is where that money should go, right? You know, so I just think there's so much here. There's so much happening that that impacts our lives, that deeply impacts our lives. But no, we're so distracted and we're so busy with just trivial, just nonsense. And, you know, people are focused on, you know, college and pro sports. I mean, like it's a religion. You know, to a lot of people, it is a religion. But not willing to question. I mean, that you could bring on a new coach to Michigan State. More people will talk about that than we'll discuss, you know, who's on the board at the Federal Reserve, you know, and who actually writes a lot of our economic policies. You know, who's driving the train when it comes to voting in Congress and in the House and in the Senate on a lot of these bills that are just flying off the shelf that are coming through that clearly focus more on protecting the elites and protecting those special interest groups and protecting corporations while ignoring 99% of the country, the needs of 99% of the country. I mean, and it's all right there in your face. In 2020, we witnessed the greatest upward transfer of wealth in human history. No one cares. No one. Nothing. I mean, the money is changing hands like crazy. There's this increasingly consolidated focus of power and control and finance and, you know, and the technocracy is growing and all this stuff is happening. And it's like we're laying the last layer of bricks to our own prison. And we don't care. We welcome totalitarianism with a smile and a hug. You know, it's astonishing. I'm 39 years old, and just the change that I've witnessed over the past 20 years is remarkable. It's remarkable. It's predictable. But it's still interesting to watch millions and, well, in this case, billions of people just lulled into this fake sense of safety and security and just willing to hand over so much. You know, they don't want any responsibility of any kind, no agency, nothing. Here, you can have complete control of my life. Just let me watch my TV, play my video games, watch my pornography, drink my beer, smoke my marijuana or whatever. And just leave me alone, and that's fine. It's interesting, to say the least. But anyway, I wanted to keep this under 30 minutes. Those are just some of my thoughts. Let me know what you think. I'll post a question out there just so people can make some comments. You also can still find the Snail Nation Facebook page and on Instagram. And you can email me, snailnation11@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts because I think it's imperative that we openly talk about these things. If we are to say that we are a free nation, we are a constitutional republic, which I don't believe we are. But those who believe that, sure. But we should be able to talk about these things freely. So those are just some of my thoughts. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for your support. And we'll talk again soon. Snail Nation out.